I don't have the stories of the people directly who say they were told by the police that it's the Fitzmaurices that sent us. Why don't get mad at us? They want you out of here. And I think that, and then this may be some rather old stuff. This may have happened within a year, or even more than a year ago. I just got wind of it recently myself, and I don't have confirmation or proof. So it is being put as a series of questions. It is really a question to the mayor and to the head of the Citizens Police Review Board, Arnie Leff. Have you, in fact, taken action to remove homeless people from the piece of property along, I guess it's between Green Street and the next street over, which has traditionally been used by homeless people to sleep in and also to be on during the day? And it's a relatively simple matter to confirm it or deny it. And if anybody has any information on that, I encourage them to call in. I'm hoping to have a better report on a future show. And actually, I'm sorry to the caller who called in if I gave the impression I was going to be speaking about that at length today. I or Becky, I don't think we had any plans to talk about that. If I gave that misimpression, I really apologize to those who were calling in. What I did intend to talk about today, or actually to play today, was an interview with Christina Tafoya, the woman who claims severe police misconduct from several sergeants and perhaps other members of the police department in an incident that happened last September in the Beach Flats. I have been able to dig up that tape, and it looks like I may have time, though if the little red hand does show up late, I will have to stop this tape, and I'll be happy to do so since it is on their time I am playing, and I'll have to play it on Thursday. But I'll play it now in the hopes we can get it played, and there'll be an opportunity for us to hear this kind of follow-up interview with Christina Tafoya, which kind of speaks for itself. We're talking to an anonymous woman, who I will call Jay. Provided, of course, we can find the right tape. That's always a significant factor here. I think we actually have it here, so here we go.
Hey, we're on the line with Christina Tafoya. And Christina, we're catching you on Saturday night. Hope you're not being dragged to the ground by cops tonight. How's everything going?
Oh, it's going okay.
I know that a couple weeks ago I ran into you at court, and we heard of this very bizarre case back in August where police apparently came after you and two of your friends.
It was actually September.
September?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Do you remember the date?
I have it written down.
Uh-huh. And you talked about this at some length on free radio about a week ago, and then, or a couple weeks ago, and then I guess a reporter from the Metro Santa Cruz got interested, and the story came out there last week.
Uh-huh.
And today, or I guess it was yesterday, you actually went to the police station to investigate the possibility of filing a complaint against the officers involved in, I guess the incident was one of excessive force, rude and abusive behavior. How would you summarize, just very briefly?
Just police misconduct.
Police misconduct. You want to summarize again? I mean, I know you've done this a number of times, but summarize what happened again kind of briefly.
Well, I was walking home and we were stopped by police vehicles and they drew their weapons and we were forced to the floor by them.
You'd be near the ground, sidewalk?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, we were told to shut up and, you know, we were told we were being searched and I said, no, I'm not being searched. They said, yes, you are, we can do what we want, and put me up against the wall, search me, and I was in handcuffed and put into one of the police vehicles.
And you were held for how long?
We were there for about 45 minutes to an hour.
And the crime that they were investigating you for was murder, rape, perhaps?
No, we said that we fit the description of people who were in a fight. But when I went to court, the officer said it was a routine park check.
And in fact, you got a ticket for
being in the park after hours.
So, in effect, you were, based on what what I've heard from you testify in court under oath, and
yes,
heard you testify at the radio station, and from what I've read of your account in the Metro Santa Cruz, you were humiliated, harassed, abused, and it may not be, is it fair to say terrified?
I just think that what they did was wrong, and I feel like, I don't know how to say this.
They shouldn't do it to anybody else?
Just, you know, taken advantage of. I don't think they should do it to anybody else. I don't think it should happen to anybody, no matter what street they're walking down.
This was in the...
Or what time of night it was, or what color their skin was.
This was about 12:15 in the Beach Flats.
Yes.
And we're talking about a street which was connected, what, Uden and Raymond Streets, as you walk through what they kind of call the park, but there's not much greenery there. It's mostly...
It's a basketball court and some cement.
Right, and a community trailer?
Yes.
And you are Hispanic or Latina?
Yes.
And the officers who did this to you were somewhat whiter of hue?
Most of them were Caucasian officers. There was one Hispanic and one, I don't know what he was. I kind of looked of Asian descent. I'm not sure.
How many cops were involved?
Throughout the whole hour, about 9.
Wow. And generally, there were how many there at any one time?
With the K-9, I believe there was 2.
And of course, the canine, since the canine is an officer, that's what the police will tell you. You have to add that doggy officer, you know.
Oh. I guess he's a little bit more scarier than the ones that carry the guns.
But he certainly didn't show his badge, I imagine.
No.
Well, have you experienced any ramifications in the police department? I know I heard from the reporter in question that the police were not happy with the story.
No, they were not.
Did they talk to you at all about that?
No, I only spoke with the representative for the police department, Sergeant Colleen McMahon.
Colleen McMahon, who's also the new liaison with the Citizens Police Review Board, by the way. She sits on that body, even though she's not appointed by a city council member. She's their police person on the board, or she's not actually sitting on the board, but she sits up there on the dais with the board members. You talked to her on Friday. What was your impression? How did that conversation go?
She seemed like she was interested in what I had to say. I don't know if everything she told me was correct or
accurate?
Completely accurate. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that she made it look a lot like she wanted me to receive justice. I don't know if it was all sincere.
Did you make any requests for information from her?
Yes, I did.
What did you ask to learn?
Been informed that the officers were saying that they were not there that night, a couple of them, and I asked her if I could see proof that they were not there. And she kind of answered most of my questions with, I don't know, and I'll have to check on that, and I'm not sure, but...
I understand that you had a witness with you, a woman who was a writer for the Metro, but when she wanted to bring her friend along, they refused him the right to come with you?
Yeah, they said that one witness was more than enough.
Did you want to have this man with you?
I had asked originally.
So they denied your request?
They denied my request.
Was she the only sergeant, because I believe she is a sergeant?
Yes.
Was she the only police person who was there in the room with you, other than the reporter?
And she taped the conversation.
And I guess you also, for your end,
yes.
You taped
Ms.
it, too.
Ms. Freeland taped it.
And, of course, you should feel free, if you'd like, to play that tape on free radio. We'll be happy to play that if you think you'd like that to happen. I know there's always a certain confusion for people going into these circumstances as to whether they should do it at all, because when the police department really acts badly, the best remedy is to get some sort of court settlement against them, because that, they understand, you hit them in the wallet and they start going, ow, ow, ow.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you can proceed another route, or two routes at the same time, where you are informing the community what's going on and hopefully encouraging people who may be suffering the same kind of harassment you're suffering now to
Well, Sergeant McMahon also informed me that I could make a complaint with the Citizens
Police Review Board.
Yeah.
You can't. Yeah, I mean, certainly.
He gave me the paperwork to do that, and she kind of encouraged me to do that.
Right. I mean, that certainly is something that you can do, whether she says so or not, and she's quite correct. The Police Review Board has been, as you may have read from the article that was right next to your article in the Metro,
yes,
about kind of an interview with retiring Citizens Police Review Board member Dan Alper, that the board is largely useless in terms of...
And that was one of the other questions that I asked her. I said, you know, is this filing this complaint going to be any good? Am I going to see action? And she was very vague on a lot of her answers. And
well, interestingly enough, I mean, Sergeant McMahon has been around for probably at least a decade. Certainly at least half a decade. I think more than that, like 7 or 8 years at least. She's been in various aspects of police work, ranging from decoy work for prostitution to, she's been a sergeant for a number of years now. I found it very, very interesting because I heard a report of your interview with her from the Metro reporter who was also there, and the fact that she expressed so much ignorance about...
Yeah, that's what kind of seemed funny to me also.
It seemed like either she was perhaps not being entirely candid, or either that, you kind of reduced to believing maybe she just... They sent someone out to you who didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even though one would think she would know what's going on, because she's been around for a while, and she is fairly new as a liaison officer with the Citizens Police Review Board. I know that we spoke with the reporter who said that both the police chief and Sergeant Clark, and Sergeant Clark and Sergeant Vogel were two of the individuals you felt you understood were abusive officers in this contact with you back in September, right?
Yes.
And you understood this because they didn't tell you their names, right?
No, none of them.
But you heard other people mention their names to them? How did you figure out it was Clark and Vogel if in fact that's who it was?
Well, that's when I had the original ticket and I had wrote down names and badge numbers that I could see as I was there.
So you saw the badge numbers of these two men, but you didn't see their names?
No, I did not see either. I saw the name. What I have is a piece of paper in which the names are written down.
Where did you
I have a few badge numbers also.
Where did you get the names written from?
From what I saw that night.
Right. So at some point you saw the names Clark and Vogel?
It was dark. It was the nighttime. That's what I wrote down.
Right, but that's what you thought you saw on their uniform?
Yes, that is what I believe that I saw. And when I wrote it down, I mean...
Right. No,
the only reason that I believe if there is any mistakes with the names is because I did not have any other information.
Right, of course. And it's their responsibility to say who they are and
exactly,
the fact...
And not walk away and tell me that I was not going to get their names or, you know, that I didn't do anything about it.
Right, the fact that you objected to a search by a non-female officer, the fact that you objected to being handcuffed, the fact that you objected to having a gun pointed at you and dogs within, would you say, inches of your body barking, or is that too much?
I'd say feet.
Feet? The fact that you objected to being told to lie down, directed to lie down, essentially dirty your clothes on the sidewalk at midnight in what was a routine park check, all this made you a woman who was had... too fucking loud a mouth, or some such thing, as they put it?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, also, they informed the reporter who was trying to investigate this that I was mouthing off.
Mouthing off.
Mouthing off is what they said.
You had two companions with you who were kind of effectively intimidated earlier than you in this process, right?
Yeah.
And you eventually did feel the fear that they were successfully spreading as men with guns, badges, radios, in groups of as I say, people in blue, gangs of blue individuals that are well-armed and funded by the city can do late at night, or actually any time of the day. You yourself eventually felt intimidated, right?
I just feel that, you know...
You stopped saying, why are you doing this?
Because I felt like I didn't want to go to jail that night.
Right. And they threatened to take you to jail for, quote, resisting arrest?
Yes.
But in fact, your resisting arrest did not involve any kind of physical behavior, right? You didn't attempt to run away?
Boy, what's that?
Uh-huh.
You didn't attempt to pull your hands away from them?
No.
You didn't attempt to, you didn't refuse to give your name?
No, I did not.
You didn't refuse, did you have ID?
No, I did not.
But you didn't refuse to identify yourself?
Nope.
You didn't start screaming at them and make it impossible for them to question the other people?
No, not.
You weren't creating a disturbance?
Not that I know of.
And... So you were resisting arrest solely because, in their minds, you were asking them questions that and essentially objecting to their behavior and inquiring what their authority was?
Excuse me?
You were asking them on what basis they were stopping you?
Yes.
You were asking them to follow procedures, like if they're going to search you, bring in a woman to search you?
And I believe that is the law, I mean.
Right.
That's what I told them, and they said, nope, I was wrong.
And you also noted that their search of you was an illegal search in the sense that they didn't just pat you down for weapons, but they started looking inside your pockets?
No, I informed them that they could not even...
do that, but they did that anyway, right?
Yes.
And they searched you inside your pockets, right?
They asked me to empty out my pockets, and they patted me down on my legs, in the inner leg, on the side of my body, in front of my stomach and back.
Mm-hmm. See, if you are being detained, you weren't even, I mean, you eventually...
They also informed the reporter that the reason that I was not read my Miranda rights is because I was not being arrested.
The Miranda rights deal is kind of a tricky deal. Miranda rights, they only read you if they're going to start questioning you about a crime. Even if they're arresting you for something, they don't usually read people Miranda rights unless they start asking them questions, because it doesn't, you know, even though you see it on TV, it isn't really used that way. But what they can't do, for instance, and this is my understanding, they cannot search you unless they're actually arresting you. If they're arresting you, then they can search you, and if you're a woman, you have the right to be searched by a matron.
Yes.
But if you're just being detained, the most they can do is pat you down for dangerous weapons, because they've got no basis for searching you. And in order to even detain you, they have to have what they call reasonable suspicion that a crime has been committed and that you are somehow connected with it. And I guess you could say they had reasonable suspicion, perhaps, that although they talked about this party, I'm not quite sure what the basis of their reasonable suspicion of the three of you walking around was to hold you for so long a period of time. Did they make inquiries about you and the party in this stop?
No, they did not.
They
stopped us, and when I was yelling at them and asking what we were being stopped for, they said that we fit the description.
And did they ask you?
Fight. But if that was correct...
Right.
Then when I went to court, I think the officer would have said that, and no, he didn't.
Did at any time they ask you if you'd been to this party?
No.
Did they ask you if you'd been in a fight?
No, they just said that they heard over the radio that there was a fight.
So, in other words, the supposed acts that they were stopping you for, they didn't even ask you about.
Not really. They
didn't act like they were investigating this fight, in other words.
No, they just looked like they wanted to stop us and search us and get our names and see if anyone of us were on probation or parole, and none of us were.
And not only that, apparently, because that could have been done within 5 or 10 minutes, they then held you for 45 minutes because you objected to the process?
I believe that's why.
You think it's anything to do with your skin color or your ethnic background?
I think that in addition to to where we were at had a lot to do with it.
So, you also were photographed in this situation?
Yes, that's one thing that I did neglect to tell the sergeant, that I was photographed.
Are you recording?
No.
It's a strange sound on the line. You hear it?
It's my phone. It's,
Oh, okay. I get a little paranoid at different times. Should I call you right back and try to skip this sound?
Actually, it takes a while for it to charge.
Oh, I see. Okay, well let's ignore it and proceed. Still there? Hello?
Yeah.
So you were photographed. You also said that this has happened to other people, including a rather diminutive woman who went to court, got all the charges against her dismissed by Judge Kelsey because Chelsea found it not credible that a very small woman could intimidate a very large officer, right?
Excuse me?
Why were charges against her dismissed?
Because the judge did not see enough proof in the officer's story.
And then, again, the number of officers involved in this was about 9 or more?
I'd say about, at the most, 9.
So 9 or less?
Yes.
And you got the names or numbers about 5 of them, but not because they gave them to you voluntarily?
No, because I looked and I wrote down what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for the officers that say they weren't there. If I made a mistake, it was, not my fault. It was because when I asked questions, I was not given answers.
And you didn't really get too much of an answer from Sergeant McMahon either when you wanted to
find out if they were there. No, not at all.
I mean, for example, McMahon has photos of every police officer in the Bureau. She could have showed you a list of those photos and said, are these the people you saw? Which, in fact, is what they would probably do if it were a crime, if they were investigating a crime against a non-police officer.
I asked her if anything was going to happen, any sort of investigation, and she said not until I filed a complaint.
Mm-hmm. And, that's also not true. I suspect there's an administrative investigation happening right now inside the police department, but of course it's not an investigation that you or I know anything about because it happens inside the department. And in fact, even if you do file a complaint, we aren't going to know what goes on with that investigation unless the Citizens Police Review Board asks for public hearings, which it has never done, ever, in its 7-year history. But still, I recommend you file with them because I think that the next person who wants to file a complaint about Sergeant Vogel or Sergeant Clark, assuming that those are the people that, you saw there, will have a record of previous complaints, and that can be helpful in court cases. You follow me?
Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure that that's what I'm going to do, is file a complaint and see where I go from there.
All right. Well, I encourage you to tell your friends that if they have had any problems with the police, and I guess people have come to you and talked to you more as a consequence of this whole thing?
Yes.
People at work have been being supportive?
Oh, definitely.
And you haven't suffered any reprisals from the police yet, right?
Not yet. I'm hoping I won't.
And I'm hoping you won't, too. They can give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's off-air, if they want to get in touch with you, and I will pass on their phone numbers to you so you can call them.
Okay, thank you.
And if any of them want to call in directly, of course, the radio line is 427-3772. Please call to the station and talk about what's happened to you, either in English or Spanish, and I guess hopefully at some time we can get you or your mom or someone you know who's pretty good at translating to get the word out to both the Spanish and English-speaking communities.
Mm-hmm.
I want to apologize for talking so much. I want to thank you for talking as much as I've let you.
Oh, okay.
And is there any more you want to say? Any thoughts you have on the subject?
No, I think I'm through.
Hey, Christina, thank you.
Okay. Well, it was good talking to you, Robert.
And that was an interview with Christina Tafoya, recorded last night. The beeping in the background, as a caller just asked, was her phone apparently losing its charge and letting people know that it's got to be recharged. So it wasn't anything untoward or peculiar or suspicious. What do you think of all this police misconduct being alleged by Christina Tafoya? Is she just one of these wild and crazy hot-blooded Latinas who doesn't know what she's talking about? I think not. She seemed pretty clear-headed, pretty slow and methodical when she was in court talking about this, and the interviews I've had with her since have made me believe otherwise. But what do you think? Call in at 427-3772 in this last half hour of the extra-long edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides if you want to get your say in on this issue. I was reading from a report from Camp Dignity, the mobile homeless encampment up in Portland, Oregon. I guess now is in its fifth or sixth site. And here is a report again from one of the people who's doing the camping up there, one of the homeless sleepers. From February 7th, the morning breaks clear and cold over Dignity Village this morning, the world's first fully mobile tent city. Much is happening, and very quickly, since we moved from River Place to our present location under the flyover of the Fremont Bridge. Our present site is a traffic island circumscribed by a curb. As we explained to Commissioner Sten, we wish to remain a village and not grow into a mighty tent city. We wish to grow together as a community and not grow outwardly at this time. We cannot build on sinking sand, and what we are building is based on love and respect for ourselves and each other. We have tapped into a huge area of human need. 2,000 or 3,000 people sleep out at any given night in this small city alone. We grow as a community. People arrive constantly with tents or seeking tents. We need tents. We task out. Many helping hands take on the work necessary to run a village. Representative Bowman visited our village with words of reassurance. Well-wishers stop by in a steady stream with food and other donations. We have enough to eat. There is indeed corn and wheat at Jah Mercy Seat. The Reverend Ronald Williams of the Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church announced at a press conference at the village on Monday plans for a fundraising benefit. We give thanks. Communication was a problem at our third site by the Morrison Bridge. Our cell phones were flat. The pressure and stress of our impending move hampered communication. We have a little time now where we are. Our communications are back up and running. We have a bulletin board now, and our cell phone is charged with minutes and electricity. Communication is so important in this informational age, in this revelation time. While the time of the tactical use of email is not yet done, we have developed our own website. Our address is www.outofthedoorways.org. That's www.outofthedoorways.org to reach the Camp Dignity in Portland, Oregon. Much of our communication has come through this soldier's voice. No one voice is more important than any other voice. Soon now other voices shall be heard. One day every tongue shall tell of who we are and what we have done in this time. My name is Jack Tafari, soldier of His Majesty, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, and the conquering lion of the tribe of Judah. That's a February 7th report from Camp Dignity, and here's a February 14th report. Good morning, most English-speaking countries in the Western Hemisphere. Good morning, all Dignity soldiers and crew, and good morning, editor of the Portland Tribune. We formerly homeless people at Dignity Village ready our front page lead story, A Voice Cries Out for Dignity, with great enjoyment and interest. It was informative, balanced, and for the most part, factually accurate. We are pleased with Brian Pollard's excellent work on our behalf, with the Out of the Doorways campaign, with City Commissioner Eric Sten's willingness to work with us, and with the February 26th evening of fasting our friend and supporter Reverend Ronald Williams is planning for our benefit at the Smith Memorial Ballroom at Portland State University. Hopefully it will help us find a permanent site. We also like the photos that photographer Ellie Basket took of us. It is a shame that the photo of Dignity Village itself was a couple of weeks out of date. This morning there were 45 tents on the small traffic island we occupy, and in terms of space, we are virtually full up. In your story, Rob Justice, director of JOIN, asks if Dignity is helping people transition out of homelessness to housing. Dignity Village is pleased to announce that Dignity's number one soldier, John Reese, goes into transitional housing today. John, a double amputee Vietnam-era vet, is the Grand Marshal of our popular shopping cart parades. No one really reached out to John Reese when he lived in a parking lot for most of last August or when he lived under the Broadway Bridge. John's connection with the Out of the Doorways campaign, his role as a dignity soldier, and the attendant publicity that has generated has helped him find housing. Tony Swanks, director of operations at Portland Rescue Mission, says that without an address, people living in dignity won't be able to find employment and improve their situation. I would like to point out that many of us already have jobs and that our address is Care of Street Roots, 1231 Southwest Morrison Street, Portland, Oregon. Our situation improves daily, and we are all working for dignity. The city objects to sanitation issues surrounding urban camps. We point out that both our portolets, porta-potties, are serviced twice weekly, and after our porta-potty benefited on Friday at 8 p.m. at Stumptown Roasters Coffee, we hope to have enough funds to acquire a wheelchair-accessible portolet as well. At the suggestion of Street Roots staff member Ramona Cowles, we Dignity Soldiers began developing our own website at our previous location by the Morrison Street Bridge. We also developed a news service via email which goes out to four countries, which accounts for the unusual salutation at the beginning of this letter. Our website address is http://outofthedoorways.org. We invite anyone interested in who we are to check our website or to visit us at Dignity Village. My name is Jack Tafari. I'm a Dignity Soldier and coordinator for the Out of the Doorways campaign. And that, again, is the February 14th report from Camp Dignity, the camp in Portland, Oregon, of homeless people that has moved, I guess, now to its fifth or possibly its sixth site after Judge Gallagher declared all the sleeping bans and the camping ordinance in Portland were illegal, unconstitutional, and hence did what our Santa Cruz judges should have done and have yet to do, which is throw out the sleeping ban. Well, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm going into the last 20 minutes of our show. We have a couple of things here. I'm going to play you a couple of cuts from the last city council meeting. That was on the 13th that I attended. These are first from the afternoon session. Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, at my request, pulled from the consent agenda onto the regular agenda the question of the minutes of the last meeting, and you hear me talking about that.
Item two, the minutes. Mr. Norris pulled this. 3 minutes.
I will need 3 minutes. Mr. Mayor, just a brief concern about one item on page 402. It refers to me, and it says, I'm having trouble locating the copy, but it refers to my being ruled out of order.
What page?
I'm sorry, page 402.
402.
Maybe you could read that sentence for me, because I don't have a copy of that. It's the top of the page, 402. It says Robert Norris was ruled out of order for a comment made at the conclusion of oral communication, something to that effect. I'm not quite sure I have the exact wording.
Robert Norris made a comment from the audience, and Mayor Fitzmaurice warned Norris that he was out of order and that if he continued, he'd be removed from the chambers.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilor McKenney. Yeah, I would request that be amended to read Robert Norris and Samuel Janus, because there were two of us standing there, asked that oral communications be expanded to include the last three speakers, and then we're ruled out of order, because that is, in fact, what happened. We requested that the last three speakers be allowed to speak, and you then ruled us out of order. But two people spoke from the side, not just one. And that's my request to the city council. Thank you.
Move the minutes as they currently exist.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I'm sorry, I had another correction to the minutes.
And in fact, the council, without discussion, decided to reject my request that the minutes be corrected. The man who made the motion was Mark Premack, and the man who seconded it was Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice. We're going to do a little more of following the city council meeting after this brief excerpt, an interview downtown about an incident that happened, I think, on January 19th, where a woman was thrown into a squad car, according to witnesses, by Sergeant Butchie Baker for riding the wrong way. We're talking to an anonymous woman, who I will call Jay, who on January 19th in the afternoon on Pacific Avenue
saw an arrest by Sergeant Lauren, also known as Butchie Baker, of a woman named Jen Curry. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened that day?
Oh, I just happened to be walking down the mall past the Del Mar Theater toward the end of the block, and I see some people sitting on a bench, and one lady, I don't know, she must be about 23, healthy-looking, nice-looking, pleasant-looking, pleasant personality, as I could see her interact with other people. And there's this Baker on the scene, grabbing her, handcuffing her.
Baker, you Sergeant Baker?
I found that out later. That's his name. Uh-huh. He's putting his body into her body. I don't mean anything sexual, but I mean just overdoing it and handcuffing her. From what they were telling me, was had to do with the fact she was going the wrong way on her bike.
On Pacific Avenue.
Yeah, I didn't see any of that. I just saw the interaction between Baker and her, and her yelling at the top of her lungs, "Please tell me, what am I being arrested for? Please let me know what I'm being arrested for." And I was either four or five policemen come up on the scene too, and there was a female policeman, and I was appalled. And you could see various types of people, you know, walking down the mall at the same time I was, who were as appalled as I was at the situation, from different backgrounds, whether they were hippie looking, whether they were straight looking, whether they were touristy looking. They made comments, why should it take five policemen for this one pleasant woman? I'm saying pleasant. Uh-huh. And so I ran right over to the scene, and where they were putting her in the police car, and I said, "I want to know your names, and I want to know your badge numbers right now." And then somebody else came named Eric, who took names down and badge numbers. He's got the record. And I ran over. I said, I told Baker he was a wimp to be treating a woman like this, and over an issue of over going the wrong way on a bicycle. You know, even if she had drugs on her, I mean, not that that has anything to do with it. Why would she need this many people to hold her down? She's not on PCP. She's not acting wild or crazy. And
what was she saying while all this was going on?
Just what I told you was, please tell me. And she repeated it. Why am I being arrested?
Did the sergeant ever announce that to her, the crowd you could see?
Announce what, sir?
What he was being arrested for. What she was being arrested
for.
No.
Now, that's what I've heard, and that's what I've been told over and over again, is why she was arrested. So then I went around to the back of the other side of the vehicle, the police vehicle, and I says, please give us your name so we can help you. And she said, Jenny Curry. And
did she give a phone number?
No, she did not. But Eric took more information down than I did and called Becky to expose this. And I called him a wimp. I called him a wimp for treating a woman like that.
Right, well, it's important, I think, that people who saw this incident go to the Citizens Police Review Board and file a complaint, not because the board will ever do anything, but because it becomes a record as to what's happened. And they can always say, well, why didn't you go to the Citizens Police Review Board? And you say, well, I did.
Yeah.
I did. No, and nothing happened.
Okay, maybe I should do that then.
Yeah, not hard. They're open from 9 to 12. They're at 915 Cedar Street, one block over, two blocks down, kitty corner from the Little Shanghai restaurant. So.
And they're at the police review bar. Oh, I know where it is.
Yeah, they're at the same office as the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. So.
What are you going to do?
Go ahead.
You know, I don't understand when I'm on the mall and I see policemen giving tickets. My question is, are they giving warnings? I don't see warning tickets. You know, just $150 fine for this, and, oh, I don't think it'll affect your driver's license. You know, like they're almost happy to be giving a ticket out to, you know, to interfere with somebody's life over some petty thing, and with a slap on a big fine. What about warnings? Don't we live in the days of where there's warnings anymore? It seems like it permeates our whole system these days. There aren't any warnings for a lot of things.
Right, particularly in a town like Santa Cruz, famed for its progressive, laid-back style. Thank you very much, and if anybody's seen anything of Jen Curry or knows who she is or saw this incident, which was a Friday afternoon right before Bush's inaugural the next day, please give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
And request still goes. You're welcome to call in on the air and talk about this issue. Call-in line is 427-3772, 427-3772. And again, off air, if anybody knows who or where Jen Curry can be found or want to put her in touch with us, our phone number at Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. So, well, got another 12 minutes left. Let's pursue the city council meeting. The afternoon city council meeting has a long consent agenda, most of which is usually just quickly dealt with by the city council. I pulled several items off requiring they vote on them individually. The next item I pulled off were claims against the city for arrests that were made, both of me and of David Silva, and I talk about both these issues to the city council.
Item 3D, North.
Counselors, 3D, I believe, is concerned with the complaint of David's. No, it's my complaint, I'm sorry.
Yes. It's Robert Norris in an unspecified amount.
This claim is based on two arrests at City Council. In the first case, I was standing quietly off the side as Vice Mayor Fitzmaurice repeated and re-repeated a series of glowing statements about the Dolphin Lee demolition plan and his favorite sole source provider, Mercy Charity's Housing, which I regarded as false. I made this gesture. It is not obscene. It did not block anyone's view. I was at the side of the room standing over there. It did not disrupt the meeting. It did not deter the Vice Mayor from further glowing tributes to this group.
And just to interrupt briefly, the gesture was a yakety-yak gesture, bringing thumb and fingers together in a yak-yak-yak kind of gesture. That's what it was.
Getting millions of dollars of city money without competition or investigation. Then Councilmember Sugar, who was then mayor, interrupted Vice Mayor Fitzmaurice's speech to me. Mr. Sugar told me to stop, deciding that the content of the gesture was unacceptable. Stop or be arrested. I declined. I was then approached by Sergeant Hennick, who in effect arrested me, forcing me to leave. The gesture I made is the equivalent of a sign, "That's a lie," which is constitutionally protected speech, the kind of sign we saw held up in the city council in 1998 during the tumultuous debates around the beach south of Laurel Plant. It was frequently seen in the public audience. No one was arrested. No one was threatened. No one was barred. Non-disruptive, silent criticism of city council cannot be a just cause for arrest. As the second arrest, Golden Poppy Award. A small gold-painted portable commode was to be presented to the council. Because of my concern that the council was neglecting and sabotaging the installation of porta-potties and dumpsters, something was mandated over a year and a half ago. A bathroom or a porta-potty is a snickering matter until you have to use one. Homeless people face arrest for doing what they need to do, what we all need to do. When I brought this matter to the council attention with the Golden Potty Award, I was arrested. Now, as an exercise in satire and public education, this action is well within the scope of propriety and certainly falls within the protection of the First Amendment. It was my turn to speak. I was not speaking off topic. It was public oral communications. I addressed the entire council and my criticism of Ms. Byers' political behavior. Mayor Sugar broke in and had me dragged out of council chambers. This is the second time he had barred this particular object. He'd done so 6 months before as well. Both arrests were straight First Amendment violations. That is, they violated my freedom of speech, assembly, and petition. An arrest is when an officer forces you to do something.
Could you conclude your remarks? It's been more than 3 minutes. I know the timer hasn't been set, but it has been more than 3 minutes. Would you conclude your remarks?
Okay, I'll finish this up. I would like to see City Council stop tolerating this kind of suppression of dissent, whether it comes from the old mayor or the new mayor. I would be willing to consider mediation of this case and other pending litigation. If this council would seriously address issues of reasonable extension of public comment periods, allowing staff members to be questioned by the public, cease making policy decisions in closed session, apologize to activists who have been excluded, and establish a policy to allow the citizenry real input into the city council agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Motion on item 3D. No motion.
I move. So moved.
Please.
Second.
City Council without discussion.
Second.
And rejected.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, item 3, yeah. Set the clock, you didn't notice the.
Council members, David Silva couldn't be here today. He's not feeling well, but he heard most of this speech over the phone, and he approved it pretty much, though it represents my thoughts and not his. On June 13th, David Silva was assaulted by police and hauled away in a psychiatric 5150, which the Dominican psych ward doctors themselves dismissed as frivolous. This arrest has particular significance for those of us concerned with restoring democratic process at City Council. Silva was a homeless advocate, abducted in the midst of the Safe Sleeping Zones controversy. He was chair of the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee. SCAN is the powerful organization that successfully elected 5 of the 7 sitting City Council members. Silva created the powerful May 31st SCAN resolution, the subject of council discussion as he was dragged off. Silva's resolution asked for guarantees of no evictions from the Dalton Lee apartments and prompted racist remarks from Councilmember Sugar, which suggested tenants were living in squalid, filthy conditions, packed in like sardines, and could go do that in Mexico. As Silva was moved to the podium to explain this resolution, he was arrested, apparently on prior order from then-Mayor Sugar. This arrest terrified many Spanish-speaking tenants of the Dolphin and Lee apartments in the audience for the first time. Some of them, no doubt illegals, mastered their fear, waiting to speak at the microphone. It will be a very uncomfortable session for City Council. In the week before the council meeting where he was arrested, Silva was also struggling with another issue, the Save the Homeless Safe Sleeping Zones proposal from a premature burial by a combination of police misdirection, media misinformation, and corporate email smears. It became clear that the prior council, even those who had represented themselves as allies, like Mayor Sugar and Vice Mayor Fitzmaurice, were not going to put the sleeping ban, the safe zones, or the blanket ban on the agenda in a timely manner, or move porta-potties and dumpsters into the zones, or challenge the lies being spread about the safe zones. He despaired. He suggested the council might not listen to anything but someone burning themselves up in front of their eyes. The day after this desperate statement, Silva met with the mayor and apologized for the image. On the day of the council meeting, he had friendly dialogues with police for some time before the afternoon council session started. Prior to his arrest, he was not warned, he was not cautioned, he was not searched. He walked freely behind the council dais where the press table used to be and met Heather Berner, the Sentinel reporter. He chatted with Sergeant Hennig. It was only when Nena Ruiz, Residentes Unidos organizer, another critic of the council, and the leader of the Spanish-speaking people in the audience approached the microphone, the police, on prearranged signal, acted to remove him from the chambers. He was beckoned outside by a police officer, handcuffed, then dragged off, followed by a crowd of about 50 people who had previously been in the council chambers. This public removal of a prominent critic had a significantly chilling effect on some of the Latino people who came to testify. They had seen this kind of thing happen in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Mexico with lethal consequences. I can't finish the speech, but I'll pass the copies of it to the city clerk for you to look at. I encourage you to consider David Silva's claim seriously before rejecting it. He's not here because of ill health and can't argue with himself. Thank you.
Thank you. A motion? A just brief comment.
Now hear an outrageous statement by Councilmember Christopher Crone, essentially discrediting David Silva and indicating why the council was going to reject any kind of compensation for this false arrest. Again, the key issue here is that Silva at one point said that he would burn himself in front of the city council, that apparently that was the only way to get their attention, set fire to himself as Buddhists had done in Vietnam, let's say, in the 60s. He apologized for it shortly thereafter, and he was in no way approached by authorities within a 48 hours after he'd made those comments, which would be the basis for doing so if people thought he was really serious about it and had a psychiatric problem, nor was he accused of a criminal threat, at which point he would have been barred from city council, and they would have pulled him away from the council and not let him walk around and talk to council members. Neither of these things was done. Instead, he was taken away at a key moment when the Dolphin Lee proposal was being discussed. Anyway, here is Christopher Crone's comments. And for any of those who thought Crone was some kind of a liberal, this may give you second thoughts.
I share something that he said as far as possibly not looking like people understood why Mr. Silva was being apprehended at that moment in time, but I don't think some people understand that we get a lot of calls at City Council, and some of them, people express themselves. And this particular call, someone said they were going to set themselves on fire on the front lawn. One of the council, two of the council members. That's a very serious thing. In fact, it was chilling to several council members, and it's not the kind of things that we get elected for, and don't know about that when you get elected. And I looked into it and talked to several people, and I think that we did actually take appropriate action. And I don't think the other two one council member is not here, and the other council member I don't think is going to react. But I think to his family, it was a very serious thing, and again, just not what you expect when you're on the council. And I think you got to take something like that very seriously as well.
Have a motion, please. Move that item with you.
And the motion was unanimously passed. Of course, what Crone doesn't say is that had they really taken it seriously, they would have acted within 48 hours of the threat, or they would not have allowed him near the council. It obviously wasn't taken seriously in any real way, but it seemed, or else it was done in an extremely slipshod manner that would give the impression that a particular person was being silenced at a particular time. Namely, when the head of the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee walked up to the mic, or stood in line to wait at the mic while Nena Ruiz, the chief critic of then-Mayor Sugar and the chief opponent of the Dolphin Lee Project, was speaking at the mic for nearly the first time before a Hispanic audience, which for the first time had some translation facilities in the audience. So Crone's explanation, as usual, is completely inadequate, and it just makes one despair, particularly when you hear stories that Crone is somehow supportive of changes in the Citizens Police Review Board, or supportive of rights for tenants. For example, he was one of the people who originally voted against the Dolphin Lee Project in the summer of 2000. Well, he voted against the resolution that City Council passed in July, which cut the Lee tenants out of the process. And one wondered if, but then, of course, he began ratifying it, rubber stamping it in the October votes when the money was handed over to Mercy Charities to purchase and then to demolish, to purchase the Dolphin and then for the city to demolish housing that could have been refurbished in the Dolphin, in the Rex Court property across the street. So it's 3 o'clock coming up. Boy, am I going to have to go into another 3 hours here? Boy, where are these talk show hosts, man? It's kind of spooky. I mean, has there been a nuclear war or something? I don't really know. I'm going to take a brief musical break here. If I can find some music, that's going to be a problem. Let's see here. In case you want to join this hoi polloi or this potpourri or whatever you will, give a call to 427-3772. 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we can use a little input from the audience on some of this stuff. The Tuesday City Council meeting was quite an active one, had a lot of interesting items on the agenda. Mainly, these were the... I came for a very particular few items to talk about these claims. David Silva has not been well and wasn't able to be there to speak for himself, as I said. But again, even had he been, it looks like he got absolutely... really zero consideration from the City Council. Well, I don't know how much time we're going to have. It is 3 o'clock straight up, and cut your hair and get a fucking job is supposed to be coming on now, but I'm afraid that the barber has not arrived, so I'm not sure. Maybe she's been waylaid in some respect, so maybe it's time to... Well, we'll continue with a few other items. Here is a continuation of an interview with a man who was feeding homeless people in New Jersey, Chaim Levin. He's a rabbi. He was challenged by the city who threatened to shut him down, and he just fed them all the faster, as Food Not Bombs people have done in cities throughout the country, particularly in San Francisco and Santa Cruz, where we actually have faced arrests and injunctions for feeding homeless people, though not recently. Chaim Levin was also a supporter of the City Council Coffee Clatch and Tag Team Teach-In, and he got a letter back from Tim Fitzmaurice, which essentially ignored the real issues and praised Fitzmaurice's behavior of bringing snacks and an extra hour to the armory, as well as, I guess, a big financial grant for Mercy Charity's housing. There's a huge amount of money that they recently got for Mercy Charity's housing. Mercy Charity's housing's wonderful project to create less housing than currently exists at the Dolphin and Lee Apartments and the Rex Court property, and essentially to dispossess people who are currently in what is to them affordable housing, all using the 204 Riverside Apartments as the major boogeyman, when, of course, the city could have purchased those apartments a year ago with the money instead that it's been squandering on this whole Dolphin Lee bulldozing deal. Anyway, here's Chaim Levin talking about New Jersey and about his fight to feed people there.
Can blow up any moment.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We're dealing with volatile characters here. You know, that's why we're covering our backside so much with, you know, all the phone calls and making sure that the media knows everything that we're doing at any time, you know.
So you're feeding people daily at what time?
Around 3-ish.
And what kind of meals are we talking?
Hot.
Hot meals like?
Stew, potatoes, hot dogs.
Uh-huh. And
loaf,
how many
vegetables,
people?
Fresh fruit. But we give people the best meals possible. We don't serve peanut butter jelly sandwiches.
And where do you get the food from?